So this is the condensed version. What to do? Let me squeeze it. The actual version is 4 hours, at least. And why only four? Because that is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching. He said, Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan. Nirantar means without end, actually, literally. Nirantar, antar means end, it's sort of logical. Nir means negation, so no end. Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan. That's really what it should be. So we'll have a little intermezzo. And then we'll pick up the tune one more time. Bhakti is a science. It's actually the only science. Because at least the Latin word science means knowledge. And knowledge means knowledge of the truth. And knowledge of the truth means knowledge of the self. The self is in Sanskrit delineated by the word Atma. And the word Atma is referring to various aspects of the self. It refers to the body, it refers to the mind, it refers to the soul, the so-called mind-body-spirit thing, and which is giving us different aspects of ourselves. And the Bhagavad Gita is highlighting the soul as the most essential of those three. Because it said the body, how long does it last? Depends, but, you know, like... Yeah, just a friend of mine, his mother made it 2 weeks short of 100 years old. Well, then you all go like, wow, that's amazing. In my town, if you make it to 100, the mayor comes. It's not a small town, you know. So, my grandparents were waiting for it in their 90s, but you know. That's just before 100. Yeah, so the body, that's lasting only so long. But what about the mind? Well, interesting, the mind lasts a long time. Because what happens at the time of death is something I found out a long time ago. When I first went to India, one day I was in the city of Benares. And just then, as I came out of the hotel in the morning, there was a dead body in the street. Wow, you can imagine. I mean, where I'm from, we don't have such things, you know. So I was shocked, right? That's like, and the body was just lying there. No blanket, and also no ambulance, no police, nothing. And just a body in the street. So I'm sort of looking like, what was that? And then I saw an old man. In fact, when I looked a bit closer, I recognized him. A beggar who had been sitting in the street the day before. Then, as people walked past, they were all taking some coins and throwing them on the body. And with about 10-15 minutes, the whole body was buried in coins. And I go, like, look at this, you know, this man. When he was alive, he's never seen that much money. And now he's dead. And now they bury him in money. Some sort of strange form of sarcasm or something. So I was kind of getting curious. And I asked a local, what's going on? And he said, like, well, you see, when a person dies, then the soul goes out of the body. And the soul tries to enter into the body again, but cannot. And He can hear everything. He can see everything. But somehow or other, no one can hear him. So, therefore, it is difficult for a person to move on. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, the system was that the body then should be burned as soon as possible. So that that soul who was kind of floating around in, trying to get back in would just give up, there's nothing left, and then would go on to the next destination, which is really what is meant to be. And what happens then? So, okay, that was kind of shocking. I thought, what if they would have given him the money yesterday? Maybe he would be still alive today. Right? That's the Western approach. But obviously it was a culture that was more interested in the soul than in the body. And that was kind of shocking for me. But later on I found out that what really happens is that when a living entity exits from the body, it is as they described in the street, but what they missed is that the mind also goes out, and that one stays in a subtle body, and that in that subtle body, the soul is situated in a subtle body made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then that subtle body carries the soul to a next body. And then that mind goes with us and enters also into the next body. And therefore, life after life, although we change bodies, we still have memories from last life. Because the same body is with us. Of course, most of us don't have that many memories from last life. But something is there. Why so afraid of water? I'm not afraid of water. I like water. Water is great. But some people are scared of water like anything. Yes? Why? Why? We wonder. Maybe one day a wave took them for a ride, and a bit too far, and before they knew it, they were out there as food for sharks. And maybe some didn't become food for the sharks, or maybe some were saved last minute by a surfer who came there on a surfboard and pulled them out of the ocean. But then, from that day on, a little bit of fear of water. Not to mention any names. From that day on, a little fear of water. Yeah. So just see, the mind is full of impressions. One day I got in a car and some helpful devotee closed the door of the car. Four fingers in between the door of the car. No, open up, open up, open up, open up. And as that was going on, I mean, the mental anxiety, you know, that I was sure that I would have lost four fingers. I was no doubt, you know, this is it. Rest of life, you know. Right? That's what I thought. But then when they opened the door, God, they were still on there. That was the first thing, right? So, relief, you know. Even a little bit blue, but anyway. Gosh, they're still on there. And I realized that the designer of the car had calculated it. Had calculated that someone one day would get his fingers in between the door, put some rubber, and there you go. Yay! All glories to the designer. But ever since, I have a thing with doors of cars, you know. I mean, I'm very careful when I get in the car. Keep my fingers away from the door. I never forget. This is something I never space out on that one. Always conscious. Keep my fingers away from the door. So the mind gets these impressions. Actually, the word for impression on the mind is sanskara. So many sanskaras we carry with us from our life, and they're there in the next life. So even if you don't remember your last life, still certain things are there. Like even in my next life, I'll probably be careful about doors. Okay, there's the door. Yes. So many impressions like this, life after life, we carry with us. desires we carry with us from last life. Money, money, money. That's why you're in the bank counting money. But it's not yours, because that's the karma. The desire is one thing, and there's the karma. That we are taking birth according to our desire and our karma. I'll sort of illustrate it a little bit. Just imagine, after life, you wind up in a huge shopping mall. Endless windows with different dolls, right, all decked out. And you check them out. You know, I mean, here's a tall model, there's a short model, there's a round model, there is a straight model, and, you know, a muscular model or a very beautiful model. Different models, right? Some may think, well, last life as a woman, you know. No one listen to me. Next life, a man. Yes, check it out, a man. Or a man might think, too much headache, you know. I'm going the other way. Some guys are already halfway there. Anyway, I'm leaving that aside. So, we're in that shopping mall, and you can check out different models. Test them, try them out. Now, let's put it on. We go into the shop, we put it on and see how it feels. Kind of. Okay. I like this one. Very beautiful, very kind of nice and strong, powerful, good quality. Yes, I like this one. And then you look at the price ticket, you know, and go, oh my God. I don't have enough karma for that. That's where it begins, you know. Then the shopkeeper named Maya comes personally, and Maya says, you like this model? Yes, I do. So, but you have a problem? Yes, I do. The price? Maya says, no problem. Here I have the same model, yeah? But 10 times cheaper. I said, wow, why is that? So this model stays beautiful until 35, and then suddenly it grows in size like anything. So, you know, whatever you do with it, you got to score before 35. Okay, I'll take it. What can you do? Beggars can't be choosers, right? But you don't have enough karma. When you don't have enough karma, what can you do? Right. So there you go. Everything's perfect except for the nose. You can't get that beautiful nose for this price. Jeez, you know. I mean, no problem. I've got another nose for you. This one's cheap. We put this on. Oh my God, that nose is ugly. Anyway. And there you go. It starts in school. Nose. Nosey. All the kids call you nosy. And God, you know. And then you go for the rest of your life. Nose. Just because the karma was not quite right. So, okay, because it's not really a shopping mall, but you get the idea. It is karma. It is desire and karma that is the determining factor for our next bodies. Yes. Why reincarnation? I would always think these people in the East, they kind of came up with this idea of reincarnation and where they got it from. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. What's the point? But when I understood that it was related to desire, I understood one thing, because after all, who can say when the doctor comes and says, you have 1 month to live, and you go, well, no, but there must be something we can do. No, sorry, there is nothing we can do. And then, say, yeah, but I'm not ready. Give me one more year. You know, something. No, who's ready? So, the point is, therefore, the desire is unfinished, not ready. Therefore, yes, come back again, reincarnation. Hey, it makes sense, after all. Interesting, but not like an adventurous journey. Yes, I'll reincarnate according to my desire, from body to body. Oh yes, why not? It's like a journey, one life in New York, another life in Tokyo. Maybe Hong Kong, and China's coming up. Maybe next time I'll take my birth in China. Why not? Do you, if you like pizza and pasta, then you can for the rest of my life, you know, this call. And for La Dolce Vita. So like this, there are all these possibilities. Is reincarnation some sort of endless holiday from body to body? No. Karma is also there. So, according to karma, yeah, see what we get. Have you got good karma? Have you got bad karma? Well, a bit of both. And how about karma, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, what's it all about? Did you ever go to a stingy restaurant? You know these restaurants? Did you go? I went to a stingy restaurant. And I tell you, so you order something from the menu and you get it, and when they bring it out, it's a really small portion. And you go, like, is that it? Is that it? This preparation. Oh gosh, you know, I'm going to starve here. Okay, in the menu card, to order something else, you know, as well. And then, you know, and everything they bring is stingy, everything's small portions, and you keep on ordering more in restaurants like that, and at the end you get a bill, and it's an outrageous bill, and you say, come on, you know, come on, nah, this is outrageous, no way, we never had that, no. Yes, you did, the waiter said, it came on this plate, okay, we had that, but that we didn't have, that. Yes, you had. In this bowl. Okay. So karma is like that. Everything is on the bill. Everything in life. I never did that. I always was an angel. Well, that wasn't... No, come on. You're not charging me for that. Yes. No, but I just borrowed that book. You never gave it back. It's only a book. It's a book. It was stealing. You know, I just borrowed it. Forgot to give it back. You know, like, not stealing. I just borrowed his car, you know what I mean? I didn't really steal it. I was going to bring it back. Just for a little drive. It's my friend. Why he called the police, I don't understand. So anyway, in the end, it's all on the bill. So this is a complication. And this is a complication when you are at the end of your life, coming in that shopping mall, and you have a karma, then, you know, you have a problem with the karma. And if you have a bad karma, then you get a bad back, or a bad front, or a bad top, you know. Some people have everything is good, but the top is not working, you know. This is a complication. This is certainly very difficult. Yes. So, what are to do? That's why we chant Hare Krishna for such a long time. On and on, you know, it never stops. And you think, like, is this guy ever going to stop? And he's not. Because every time we chant, all the bad karma just flies away in all directions. It just goes and goes and goes. Hey, that's good. And you get so much benefit. Yay! Like each time, you know, so it gets better all the time. So one more time, we must chant. We will before I end. In this way, This chanting is very powerful. Because this chanting is really uplifting us. So one day, the great Acharya. Acharya means achar. The word achar means to behave. Acharya means one who shows by example, by his behavior. So the great Acharya, Haridas Thakur, one day came into a house of learned brahmanas. And all the brahmanas began to glorify the chanting of the holy name. And they said, oh, this name is very wonderful. Because when you chant the name, you get freed from all negative karma. We also know that. Yes. And then they said, and another one said, oh, the chanting of the holy name gives you liberation from the cycle of birth and death, from endless reincarnation. You become free from it. So, wow, that's interesting. Then Haridas said, oh, that is only the side benefit of the chanting. It's only the side benefit. He said, yes. Actually, he said, the holy name is like the rising of the sun in the morning. As the sun is rising, first there is light above the horizon, even before the sun appears. He said, so the name is like that. Just the light of the sun, the dim reflection of the sun, the dim reflection of the name is enough to get rid of all the bad karma, is enough to give you liberation from birth and death. Just a dim reflection. What does that mean? Nam Abbas in Sanskrit. Abbas means dim reflection. So what is Nam Abbas? When the name comes by accident somewhere. You know that margarine called Rana? I never ate it, you know, because I always hated margarine myself. I used to go on strike when I was a kid. My mother at one point decided that margarine was healthier. Well, I'm not eating. It took my grandmother to save me. And she bought butter just for me. And my brother and sister couldn't have it. That was good butter, I tell you. I really like that butter. Good grandmother. Now, my brother and sister had to eat Rama. But Rama margarine, whatever it is, it may be rubbish, but the name is great. Because if you chant the name Rama, even when you mean margarine, the effect is there. Do you know why I'm sitting here today? Do you know? I'll tell you. If you want to. Can I tell you? Yes? Okay then, I tell you. All right. You know, I saw these Hare Krishnas. They used to sell books in the streets. And they were funny guys because they had false hair, wigs. They had wigs. Because they used to shave their head like him. Look at this man here sitting in front of me. The one whose head is like beaming with light. They all used to shave like him. And then on top of it, they would put a wig. So, you know, a man with a wig, I could spot him at a mile distance. I mean, that's fake, you know. A young guy, especially, a young guy with false hair, come on, you know. So I'd see them at a mile distance, so I'd always, like, take a safe detour. And thus, they never got me, the Haris. No way, they never got me. And so, because the Haris didn't get me, I met this girlfriend, right? And then she got me. And she had a dog. And you know the name of the dog? Krishna. So then at night, I would be walking with this dog. And the dog didn't want to come back. So then I would go around the block and just call out really loud, Krishna! again and again. And in this way, I was doing kirtan. Every night. And now I can't stop. So Rama Marjorie or Krishna the dog or other ways, Disco Rama. In New Zealand there's a town called Rama Rama. Cool place, you know. Check that out, Rama Rama. Where do you live? Rama Rama. Remember that in the Soviet Union, right, there was a time when there was Glasnost and Perestroika, remember? Remember how in the Soviet Union everything changed practically overnight, so quickly. A big surprise. Well, in the Soviet Union, Hare Krishna was there, but it was underground. You know, like people would like somehow or other have a book and like copying pages by hand, and there's a whole underground movement. They would make beats of paper. Right? You know, we have these chanting beats, right? Of wood. But they would make them of paper, water, paper, push, and make beats like that. Well, everything was underground. And gradually, you know, the KGB caught on to it, and gradually they arrested one after the other, and they put devotees in labor camps, in mental hospitals, and all these kind of things. And then, I remember, in the mid-80s, started a big campaign, a big, big press conference in India, which went all over the world with big, big photos of all these Hare Krishnas who were kept in jail, and who were kept in labor camps and in mental hospitals, and who were being tortured and this and that, right? And it went all out to the press in a big way, especially in India. And India had close connections with Russia and big economic ties, so they cared about India being a big country. So India became very, very upset, right? And then at one point, suddenly everything changed, and we got the news that the devotees have been released. I remember there was Sri Prahlad. You may know Sri Prahlad, famous kirtan singer. He was a boy. He was like a kid, and he sang a song because he was already a singer when he was a kid. Mr. Gorbachev, you may say, Mr. Gorbachev, please release them, set them free. You know, like this whole song. So he was part of the campaign. The Hare Krishna kids were singing the song, and it was like getting big in the campaign. So they let them out. They let out the devotees out of jail. And I remember that time we all went to Calcutta to meet these devotees coming from Russia. And they had it all organized. Bibi Govinda Swami and Indrajumna Swami. Bibi Govinda Swami leading the kirtan. Indrajumna Swami on the drum. Right? Bhakti Charu Swami and Kesava Bharati Swami, they were chosen to hug all the devotees because they are very good at it. So they gave every and some ladies also, I forgot who the ladies were that were doing the hugging. Anyway, so and then we had this like amazing kirtan on the head. And what was the name of the president who released them all? What was his name again? Huh?
What is his name?
Gaur. Nita Gaura Haribol, Nita Gauranga, Nita Gauranga, Gaura, Gaura, Gaura Bachav. You can just imagine in school, you know. Gaur. Yes, good. Da. It's all life. So that's called Nam Abbas. Even you use the holy name without knowing it, and you get the benefit. It was not by chance that that very president was the one who released the devotees. Gold, 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 bacha. Yes, like this. A few years ago, there was in the Netherlands a devotee who was very wealthy, and he was invited for a dinner with Gorbachev, who was then no longer the president, but the former president. He came for this official dinner with the, you know, prime minister, and then our... So our devotee was sitting next to Gorbachev, and they had a discussion. And he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, I wanted to compliment you for making the change." The devotee said, "You didn't have to do that. It was your choice." And Gorbachev was deeply impressed. He said, "Thank you very much. You're one of the few people who actually understand. I didn't have to do it. I did it because I wanted to do it, because I believed that it was the best for the country. I didn't have to." It's always made out as if I was forced, but no, I didn't. I actually had the choice. But that's not true. He didn't have a choice. With a name like Gorbachev, he had no choice at all. He was forced. So such is the power of Nam Abbas. Okay, back to Haida's topic, the great Acharya is sitting in the assembly and he's explaining. Yes, the holy name in the beginning, there's just the influence of the name. Even you don't know about it. You see these Hare Krishnas coming to the street. Ching, ching, boom. Hare Hare. Ching, ching, Krishna, Krishna. What's it all about, you know? Connecting these guys are like, I mean, lunatics. But anyway, that's nice music. That's what people think. But it works. The effect is there. Nam Abbas. The reflection of the name. Then you begin to chant the name yourself, consciously. Until you start chanting the name purely. And Haridas said, when you come to the point of chanting the name purely, that's when you develop love of God. Then, that day you start to practically float above the ground. That day, every moment is a moment of ecstasy. That day, you can only see bliss everywhere, and you are an ocean of mercy, and you're beaming, and wherever you touch, you transform by your amazing potency. Oh, that day. So maybe at present, we're not fully there, but by chanting Nam Abbas, which we're chanting now, one gradually comes to pure chanting. That's why we have to keep on chanting. So we're going to do it one more time for 5 minutes, because I don't want to upset the Sunday schedule, of course, because tomorrow is a day at work and the kids have to go back to school and the dog and the cat are waiting. They are hungry and all these things have to go on. So we don't want to overdo it, but just to make the point. But before I do that, maybe a question or maybe a comment from the learned assembly. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful talk. Just a comment, I was thinking of another case of maybe like Nam Abbas, like George Harrison, like son of Hari Harrison.
Yeah, Hari son, which is true. Yeah, Hari Harrison. And then George Harrison in turn chanted, "I really want to see you, Lord, Hare Krishna. I really want to know you, Lord. Krishna, Krishna," like this. In the background, there was the Maha Mantra. And at that time, you know, like George Harrison was ready for, like, I mean, hundreds of millions were ready to listen. I mean, and I remember that from that day on, well, Hare Krishna was something that was no longer totally crazy. After I heard that, then I realized, oh well, maybe it's, oh, okay, I guess they're not totally mad. So I didn't buy into it immediately, but the effect of George Harris in the world has been quite something. Yes, good example, thank you. Yes.
Is free will affected by karma?
Is the what?
Is free will.
Free will.
Affected
will.
By karma.
Affected by karma. Yes, yes. See, desire and karma are intimately related. We're not that free. You know, I mean, we can, like for salesmen, right? They know very well what you will do. They're expert at it. It's like, you know, they know what you want. They can predict what you're going to buy. Like, now they know that everyone, you know, that there's the competition with the phones, you know, and then there was iPhone, and then Samsung hit back with a big screen, you know, and now everyone wants a big screen, and now Apple has a big screen, and then BlackBerry came behind with even little bigger. Everyone now has the screen, right? And they know people want a big screen now. They're going to go for the big screen. Yeah. So they can predict. They can predict. So karma and desire are connected. Our previous activity determines our desire. If you do something for a long time, you get conditioned by it. And it carries forward. So karma and desire are interlinked. Yeah. And therefore, when we are with the devotees and we begin to serve Krishna, then we do devotional service, and that is karma-free. Then all our activity is karma-free. We get liberated from karma. That is perfection. Okay, I'll take 5 more minutes.